Absolutely.
Thank you. And thank you also for this letter that you drafted.
Sure.
And has everyone had a chance to read the letter that Carl drafted for us to send to fire commissioners? So we just need to vote on this and whether or not you approve.
Yeah, this was the request you guys made at your last regular board meeting. Mm-hmm. It's been distributed. It was distributed 3 or 4 weeks ago and hasn't been addressed since then. So there may be a certain amount of sweeping cobwebs out. And, oh, yeah, we did talk about this. But, yeah, this is per your request.
Right.
And Carl did a good job on this.
Yeah.
As he always does on everything. For what it's worth, and we're over here.
I'd be happy to.
Well, I'll make a motion to
approve it. I second that.
All in favor?
Oh, we should get a couple.
Discussion.
Okay. Yeah. Discussion. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Sorry, you want to discuss?
Well,
okay.
Just so we can do.
Yeah.
I did, as I was looking at it earlier today, I did have a couple of thoughts.
Yeah.
And again, thank you, Chief Kutzing, for putting this together.
Absolutely.
I know it's not easy to write for other people. So, you know. One of my thoughts was that I didn't remember seeing in the letters, and I could only find the November 28th and the October 21st, but I didn't see in those letters an agreement basically to hire or keep all the employees on. And I think that was in.
They sent a letter.
In a resolution that the it was part of the regular Fire District Commission meeting,
mm-hmm.
Passed a resolution that then we requested a copy of that resolution and brought that forward. And I think, did we include that into the information packet? But that's where that information came from.
It was a while ago, but I know that I have it and that we did distribute it.
Yeah.
It's been like a month.
But it's, yeah.
So it's
okay. Like I said, maybe I missed it. You know, I looked at a couple of those letters and maybe
didn't
Chief
Collins?
Okay.
Yeah. And it wasn't directed at us necessarily as much as the staff.
I can try to find
that
it.
That probably was not one that. Yeah, that wasn't one of the ones I came across.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, it was done through a specific resolution and part of the minutes of the fire district meeting, and not a specific letter that was sent to us.
And I appreciate that because it's just everyone can relax and
yes.
Business as normal and focus on their jobs.
So I just noticed something in the end of the second paragraph.
Mm-hmm.
It says also goes a long way toward finalizing the integration of the two agencies that we oversee. I think it means we don't oversee both agencies. We oversee the process.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just confusing when I read it. I was like, we don't oversee two agencies. It took me a while to realize, including in your statement of the intent to employ all current employees upon full integration, also goes a long way toward finalizing the integration of the two agencies that we oversee. How about just finalizing the integration we oversee
of the two agencies?
Because we don't oversee two agencies. I don't know.
Also, goes a long way towards finalizing integration, period.
Oh, yeah.
Or the two agencies. Or,
Get rid of the two.
The integration process.
Is that a preposition?
Do you want me to read it to you? I think I found it.
Oh, the letter?
Yeah.
The resolution?
What they did, the motions they passed.
We need it?
You don't have to. Thank you for finding it. When was it? It was a December.
It was December 11th.
Okay.
So it was quite a while ago.
I'll take your word for it. Thank you for finding it, though, because I don't remember that. And when, you know, if I'm going to be part of a letter, I mm-hmm. want to make sure that that is something they did say. Not that I don't trust you, but since you know it's under ours.
But he's a lawyer. We can talk about that.
Do you feel like that was well received by your staff, that sentiment, that letter? What was that?
Yeah, I can forward this to you.
Is it finding its way in here?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And then, you know, the only other thought that I had was we talk about coming up to speed before tackling the interlocal agreement passed by the previous hospital board, and I'm not sure we're actually tackling that going forward. I think it's kind of unclear exactly what that next step is. But I don't know how the other commissioners felt when they read that.
I mean, yeah, we should remove the interlocal agreement from the phrase because I'm not sure that we're going to work with that necessarily, that we're going to actually do something.
create something,
create
new.
Something new,
start
or different.
Start, yeah.
So
maybe a reference to working with them going forward. And again, I'm sorry to micromanage.
How about just allowing us time to come up to speed with our roles and responsibilities of the Hospital Board of Commissioners is greatly appreciated. We could just eliminate the specific. Is that?
Before addressing merger issues as the merger issues that
I like.
Yeah, before tackling the integration.
How about addressing the merger issues instead of tackling? I don't want to tackle them.
That's
right. It's football season,
yeah,
but tackling
not anymore.
A bad thing.
Okay, well,
here.
And so we'll maybe remove interlocal agreement passed by the previous hospital board, and just say before addressing.
The merger issues that are.
Or working with you, working with
yeah.
you to address the integration
I like
issues.
That. Yes.
Working with, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think the reason why this was in there was because of the specific wording of the fire district motion.
To table the interlocal agreement.
What they said was, I move that the board take no action on the administrative interlocal agreement until after coordination and collaboration can occur with the now seated public hospital district commissioners. And that was the motion that they passed. And so that's what Chief Kutzing is replying to in this letter. So I'm not saying you can't change it to what you decided. I'm just saying that's why the wording was there.
Yeah, yeah, it makes sense that we actually do have to address.
Well, before addressing
the
interlocal agreement, addressing it.
We can't just leave it hanging out no matter what we do. So
it was passed.
Addressing the issues related to the interlocal agreement could be, or the issues.
I like that.
I like that, too.
I like that.
Certainly the topic. I just want to.
Yeah.
Don't want to send the message that we're going to sit back down with them. By the way, we signed it. And
addressing the issues of the interlocal agreement. Instead of tackling.
Yeah, it's good to have it in there.
Yeah.
Nathan, are you getting all of this?
You know,
I think you need to read it back.
I've got
now.
The issues of the interlocal agreement.
Addressing the issues of the interlocal agreement.
Addressing the issues. Agreement.
Sure. Cross through tackling. Addressing the issues.
I was just going to ask, do you want to read that sentence that we're talking about so that we can get it down?
Okay. Allowing us to come up to speed with our roles and responsibilities before addressing the issues of the interlocal agreement passed by the previous hospital board of commissioners is greatly appreciated.
Yeah.
Okay. So really, you just add, take out tackling, put addressing, and then the issues of.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Got it.
Thanks. You guys are going to have to either pass this at the next board meeting or wait after this meeting for me to revise it and print it out again.
Can we approve the revisions?
You can, but then you have to sign it still, right?
I mean, we do need to sign
it. Or you can just ask Carl to sign it.
I could sign it.
You can give her the permission.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And you can just come by and sign it this week.
Do we need to have a motion for that?
We could also just come by the office and I'll sign
totally.
It.
Totally.
I would be happy to sign it. I would like all, I mean, I think ideally all of us sign it.
Any of those options are acceptable. You can delegate someone under you.
Totally. I don't mind giving you the authority to do it. I just think it really speaks
that
all five of us sign it. We all, this is what we are saying, we want to make happen, and so.
Yep. Did you want to drop the that we oversee?
Yeah, we did.
Just period after agencies?
No,
after integration.
Okay.
So, of the two agencies that we oversee, is gone.
So this is the letter Carl wrote, but with your permission, I'll update it with these changes, email it out, and you guys can come by and sign it.
Can I sign it tomorrow? Because I'm going to be gone, and I'd love. I feel like the sooner this goes out, the better.
Sign it tomorrow.
Well, you guys can just wait 10 minutes after and I can get it done.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, is it whatever you guys want to do? I'm just saying that because they're making changes during the meeting,
yes.
I have to come up with a document that you can sign.
Okay.
So there's always a delay on that.
Do we need a motion to approve
yes.
the revisions?
Yeah, you can just approve it as amended, and I have the official record.
I'll move to approve the letter as amended. I'm going to briefly just state those just so we're really clear.
Okay.
And that is to change the second sentence in the second paragraph. So that it would now read, allowing us to come up to speed with our roles and responsibilities before addressing the issues of the interlocal agreement passed by the previous Hospital Board of Commissioners is greatly appreciated. And then the second change is in the last sentence of that paragraph, just putting a period after finalizing the integration and deleting the rest.
Awesome.
Awesome. Yes.
Good
vote. Second it? Second the motion?
All in favor?
Aye.
Boy, you guys are easy editors.
Okay.
Oh, you didn't see the version. Thanks again, Chief.
Okay, we're saving audience participation to the end. It's very important to the public at this time. And unfinished business. We're moving on to committee reports and discussion. I'm going to need a little guidance here because feel a little out of the loop because I was gone for a couple weeks, and I know there were some committee meetings that happened that I don't particularly
know
about.
The CCC, the Trauma Council,
Transport
and the Transport Committee. Carl and Everett went.
Who would like to begin?
Well, I went to the Transport Committee meeting on the 6th of January, as did, weren't you, Jeff?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, and Carl.
Larry was there, and of course Carl. And I just like to say that I just found it phenomenal that this group of people is collaborating and working together. Yeah. So that was just really comforting, and what a great group of people. So I don't have any real specifics.
Anything come out of it at all? Or?
Probably the biggest thing was that Chris Martin, the executive director of Airlift Northwest, has announced her retirement.
Oh.
She'll be leaving at the end of February. I'm not sure if I shared that with the staff or not.
You did at council.
Okay. Not with the staff, but yeah. So that's kind of a big change. We really haven't finalized anything other than I am looking into a possibility of. One of the issues that came up with patient transports, whether we're using a ground ambulance, an air resource, is the move, trying to reduce the number of moves from the hospital bed to an ambulance gurney to an aircraft gurney, and what we might be able to do. So the thing that I'm working on right now is trying to see if there's a way to create a fastening system within the ambulance that would accept multiple stretchers, so that, for instance, instead of using the ambulance stretcher and then transferring to the Island Air's stretcher to get that patient loaded into the aircraft, that we could take Island Air's stretcher with us to the hospital, put the patient on their stretcher, and then move them, so it reduces two moves. Same thing with the airlift stretcher, where we may be able to put that into the ambulance, load the patient from the hospital bed onto the airlift stretcher, into the ambulance, and then onto the aircraft there. Maybe. And that's all that I'm getting at right now. The one stretcher used by Island Air is compatible. So previously, Chief Martin had some concerns about, okay, the stretcher's been modified. Does that negate any sort of warranty on it? What about our insurance? Those kinds of things. And understandably, not sure if we're going to be able to get complete resolution on that, but we'll have to try to make that argument. The aircraft, the rotary aircraft stretcher is proprietary, so I'm not sure. I've got inquiries in with both Airlift Northwest and their person who does mechanical work for them, which is Air Methods, to see if there's some sort of compatible thing. I would much rather have multiple systems in place than to completely devote an ambulance just to the airlift stretcher or just to the Island Air stretcher. So those issues are being contemplated. And then the other big thing coming out of that is, okay, well, let's try to improve the marine response. So if we need to use the boat, we can use the boat. Let's try to improve, whether or not that a wheelchair-accessible van might be a way to transport patients. So those issues are all being talked about. And of course, there's a lot of carryover because that was something that was discussed in the County Trauma Council, and then Commissioner Seitz was there for that. So we've got multiple things kind of we're juggling in different venues, the same issue in different venues. But I think that's pretty much it. And Clary, please, if there's anything that I missed in that meeting, or Trish.
Well, there were a couple things that I got out of the meeting or after the meeting also. One was that there was quite a bit of discussion about somebody had invented a stretcher the cat's meow, and that was somehow going to revolutionize, that really was supposedly quite an improvement.
It's a pretty slick system.
Yeah.
The issue that we have is that the Caravan, which is the aircraft model that Island Air uses, is quite a bit higher than what we had done previously, and our stretcher only lifts so high. It's a side-loading kind of a situation, and of course we're worried about the ergonomics and, you know, responders injuring themselves because it's a lift and a twist, yeah, which is the absolute worst motion that you can make. This particular device has some interlocking pins that then connect with the stretcher that fits into the aircraft, rotates and comes out on a slide, an inclined slide. And it's, in fact, one of our responders, Dan Bacon, was able to modify the stretcher that's actually the same one that we use in the ambulance currently, create a locking pin system, and then come up so that the angle of the stretcher matches the angle of the slide, so it's more of a slide rather than a lift. And once that patient is then onto the slide portion in the aircraft, we can remove the stretcher, and then it's the crew inside will take that patient, move the sled, and I'm going to call it a sled just for explanatory purposes, that comes in and then shifts. And as they load perpendicular to the fuselage, they end up parallel with the fuselage for transport. So that's a whole slide and a lock system. And the plan is that that's going to, you know, take a lot of that strain off of the responders. It's not perfect, but it's a vast improvement. Should work fine with ours because it's the same stretcher. It's, again, the issues of, is insurance going to cause a stink? Is the warranty or the manufacturer of the stretcher going to have issues?
So it seems like the focus has shifted a bit from talking about a helipad necessarily to actually limiting the amount of times a patient is moved in transport.
And that's part of what they're talking about is, well, not that we're taking an additional helipad off the table, because frankly there are instances where having a helipad where it totally eliminates EMS from that equation can be beneficial. It's less time involved, there's less moves, and it also keeps us 911 response ready. Mm-hmm. So we don't want to necessarily take it off the table, but Peace Island needs to be able to discuss that in terms of their grand, you know, overall plan for the campus, mm-hmm. and whether that fits or not. In the interim, we can try to improve the existing systems that we have, and that's kind of the consensus of the group right now. We haven't taken it off the table, we'll talk about it, but let's see what we can do to improve the existing systems.
Yeah, that was the other thing, that there really wasn't much of a discussion about the helipad and where it might go. That was almost the elephant in the room, because the port was there and they spent all the money on the upgrade of their helipad, and of course the hospital was there and they didn't really address the fact that they don't really want the helipad outside their ER.
The fellow who's the CEO,
Chuck Prosper.
Thank you, Chuck Prosper.
Yes.
Yeah, I appreciated his.
There wasn't really a discussion about that, but it did seem like everybody was talking, you know, was interested in doing what was best. So I'm very hopeful about that. The other thing is kind of small. It was a misimpression that I had, and that was that you want to minimize the number of transfers. And in talking to Dr. Corsa afterwards, he says, no, it's not actually the physical transfers. He says it's playing the game of telephone. He says that every time you do the transfers, it's the information that goes from one group to another group to another group. He says it's just like when you're kids and you play that game of telephone and you say a sentence, and by the time it goes all the way around, it comes back to you, it's completely different. He says the major issue is that every time you do the transfer, some piece of information is dropped or misconstrued. And so that's the real issue. It's not the physical thing of what happens with IVs or something like that. He says you can deal with that. He says it's the information transfer that occurs. That was his point of view, which was a bit of a revelation to me. So I had thought it was the physical aspect of the transfer.
And then again, just in perspective, Dr. Appleton was saying dislodging tubes.
That's where I got that impression.
So exactly,
and
that's the thing is you're going to talk to four different ED physicians.
You get four different opinions? Okay,
yeah. All right.
The other piece of that is the time. So it's about 17 minutes added on from the time we go to pick the crew up and they shut down, they get in our rig, we wait for the gate to open, we drive to the ER, they get all their stuff out, go take report, hook it all up, and we do all of that in reverse versus if it just happened once. So you've got, I mean, if you have a truly critical patient, your goal is to have them in the OR in that golden hour.
Right.
And it's not going to happen.
Yeah, 17 minutes is a lot of time.
If we're transporting from the field, we just go, you know, we don't even go to the hospital because you're going to take so much time.
Mm-hmm.
But if the patient shows up there and we're not involved in the initial transport, you are adding 17 minutes in general onto that whole trip. Mm-hmm. And you risk loss of information, loss of an ET tube, loss of IV lines,
that's 17 minutes on top of the amount of time it takes to get the aircraft
from the
landing to
that's
and
from
back again.
Picking airlift up to dropping airlift and the patient back off. So it all adds up. I mean, the patient would be served better if they were to help out here.
Sure.
There's no doubt.
Yeah.
Sure.
I mean, if that's your child, and that's 17 minutes. And that helipad is over there at the airport because the port upgraded that helipad and the hospital doesn't want it outside the ER, but that's 17 minutes and your child, boy, oh boy, would I be smoked.
Yeah.
That would, and so I think that's why it is actually an important issue.
Yeah, and there's lots, and this was kind of a pet project of Commissioner Sweeney's, and I think Dr. Edwards also was very much a proponent. There are studies and some presentations that we have archived that I'm sure we can, if you're interested in it, we can share that information with you and have you take a look at that. One of the big things that I got from, as I got involved in this project was that it's really the norm for hospitals to have an adjacent helipad. Many of the bigger hospitals, it's on the roof. And others, I think we talked a little bit about some of the initial plans when Peace Island was being designed. They had put a ground level helipad, but the original plan had it way down near where the orchard is, which kind of everybody went, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So then the next plan put it on the roof. And then that added like hundreds of thousands of dollars because there needed to be an elevator, there needed to be, you know, beef up that. So they dropped that and then it was just done. Some of the other proposals of placement would be a ground level helipad, and basically it's just right outside the ED door. And there are other hospitals designed where that helipad is often within 100 feet of the emergency room door. Again, that doesn't mean it's the best answer, and it leads to other problems. I mean, helicopter, you know, any air resource takeoff or landing has its inherent dangers with it. It's fumes from the engines, noise, all those kinds of things. Hopefully, you would figure that you can mitigate those and make, you know, to find out the cost benefit. You know, is it worthwhile? Can we mitigate those potential hazards or the potential downside in favor of that? So there's still a lot to address. But I would agree with you, Commissioner.
There was also some mention that there may be some rules associated with the FAA with a helicopter flight that's that close to the runway that may be an issue too, so it may not that simple.
And the cost of the helipad thing, it makes sense that you could totally streamline a beautiful stretcher that everybody could somehow use in our, you know, in our little world, that you've hundreds of thousands of dollars. I would think you should be able to find some stretcher that, but they're so different. I don't know how they.
The interesting thing about this is that at that ground level helipad, Airlift is willing to bear the entire cost. It's not going to cost our taxpayers or PSIMAC anything. They're willing to do that. Again, because it's on hospital property, the hospital has the right to license that. So it's not necessarily proprietary for Airlift. The hospital can grant the Navy to land there if it's built, you know, hefty enough, or the new air carrier Airlift. Is it?
Lifeflight.
Lifeflight, thank you. You know, they could say that either one of those resources could use that helipad.
It would need to be that both agencies would have to land, but yes.
We can make suggestions. It's their property, and they're going to have the funding.
We have a lot of material from a previous meeting with a consultant that drew up plans and proposals, so that's obviously...
You have it?
Because
I've got one.
We can get that, but we should maybe move on to our... let's see, CCC, sorry, Community Collaboration Committee.
Trish and I went.
I'm trying. You and Trish went. Great.
And they gave out some grants for a couple projects that one of the vulnerable population groups is working on. It's about transportation for seniors and people with disabilities, expanding that for people low income, people that want to get to enrichment programs versus just medical appointments, or physical therapy, you know, adding things in and kind of restructuring that. So. Some money went toward keeping Julia Borey, who's the person who runs that meeting, and then money for, and they're also a project on caregiving, building caregiving capacity in the community, and so to keep that program going and to start making plans for what we could do in the community, involving more community partners, and then maybe proposing later for funding to help support some of those initiatives that come from that. And they want to give out more money to the community, so they want small projects to contribute to healthcare. So food is one of them. Nutrition is a big piece with Peace Island right now. So we talk about Meals on Wheels or different, you know, nutrition programs that need funding. So they want more applications.
Do you have to add anything else?
Those were the two big things. I feel like they could have asked for more money and they would have gotten it.
I know.
Yes, I really felt like they were under asking.
Was there any talk of, in a previous meeting, they had talked about collaborating with Skagit and working on a CNA?
There's so many people that want to do training. Yeah, they talked a little bit about training programs, but there's a lot of people who are willing to do trainings. It's really the other healthcare, the other barriers.
There are so many because... You could be trained, but if you're going to make $15 an hour,
you can't afford to live.
So that's one of the big.
They talked about it all.
Okay, all right, thank you. Let's see, the Trauma Care Council.
The Trauma Council, I'm really impressed with the Trauma Council in that it's countywide and that people work so well together and that it's such a creative endeavor and so collaborative, not only with the people at the table, but with outside organizations. And now, would Chief Collins have been going to that as a fire chief, or would he just, going because of the integration talk?
That's correct.
Well, that was, and it was amazing to have him there, I feel, as well, because he has a lot of collaborative and creative ideas from coming from a bigger place. And so I think the idea was trying to solve some of the, well, just talking about all the ways people need to travel, especially on island, across the ferry, to another hospital or to another service that is low impact, right? If I got it correctly, and people in wheelchairs, people that are medically fragile, or people that just need to get to appointments. So it was an interesting discussion about, mostly about ground travel, that meeting, the last meeting.
And if I may, we also have been talking about some of the changes that are coming through with drug purchasing policies. They affect some of the smaller agencies much more than they do with us. Everything needing to be tracked now much more specifically. Mm-hmm. And so the suppliers of certain pharmaceuticals are, because of the restrictions by the federal government, they're determining the size of the lot that they'll sell you. You know, is it, you can't buy just a vial, you'll have to buy 10. Because a lot of these drugs outdate, the smaller agencies are going to be kind of hard-pressed. They're going to be, you know, wasting a lot of things that expire. So we're trying to figure out purchasing plans, something where we might maybe collaborative. At this point in time, it's not going to affect San Juan Island EMS so much because we have enough patient volume that it hasn't become an issue for us, and we don't foresee it becoming an issue for us. Dr. Corse is very pro with this in terms of looking at the pharmacology that we keep, you know, as part of our regular protocol, and seeing where we can have some savings and maybe switch some things, eliminate some things, pare things down a little bit. So that's very good as well. Something else that I wanted to mention to you all.
Oh, we also talked about like advanced directives and
right.
The pulse forms and how seniors or people in hospice, whether they can deny being flown or whether there's a way to activate some sort of advanced directive knowledge ahead of time. And Dr. Corsa, I mean, Norvin Collins had the idea of putting it on their dispatch, putting it in the system so that when an address comes up, you will know if they're on hospice and if they have some system.
Yeah.
So that
would
be quicker.
So, and really, it was very, very great to have Commissioner Seitz there because her perspective dealing with the county and senior services helps a whole lot. The fact that they have ambulance accessible vans and buses was something that we didn't know about. So that was great. And then plus the fact being interested in this advanced directive, then we were able to explain that our pulse form is what we're looking for. And I think we've kind of come up with the idea of trying to develop a checklist for somebody. Whoever comes up with an advanced directive, what do? Do they file an NGA? Do they make sure that their attorney has it? Do they make sure their primary care physician has it? Is it on record with a pulse form so EMS knows that? And developing a checklist so as that person makes that directive. So
some kind of system could come about.
And something, and then plus what Norvin and I had talked about, being able to flag certain addresses. So if we are able to kind of collect pulse information, which is the end of life kind of, you know, directives that's pared down for the EMS provider, that as we are become made aware of them, we would have a way to vet them, make sure that they were legit, and then let dispatch know, and the dispatch center is able to flag certain addresses. There's an aggressive dog, be aware of. You know, that's something that they have the capability of doing. And we would also say, yeah, be aware that, you know, there's a person, you know, at this residence that has a pulse form on file. So
on hospice.
I mean,
that's something I think would be
absolutely
really helpful, just in emergency preparedness as well, is that, you know, EMS knows who's on hospice.
And part of that is that we want to make sure that we don't overwhelm our dispatchers.
Sure,
because
sure.
That's just, we're asking them to do something. So
but somehow.
Yeah, you don't want to. Yeah,
pieces
so we're not sure it can happen yet,
but if that's possible.
It sounds so productive.
Yeah, it's great.
Do we have any other committees that need to report? No, nothing on the CID, nothing on finance, Inter-Island Healthcare Foundation, nothing.
So
So, yeah, we talked about that a little bit. I talked about that with Nathan and Pam, just that we don't have anybody that's on the Environmental Healthcare Foundation right now because
I think didn't you elect someone?
We did.
But we
okay.
haven't.
We
they
did.
Haven't
okay,
had
then
a
we
meeting.
Haven't met. There hasn't been.
Yeah.
There hasn't okay. been.
Let's see. Trish and I should share with you that we were invited by Dr. House, who's taken over for Bert Gossam yesterday, to meet with him in his office, and we met with Dr. House, his wife Sherry, Dr. Fishout, and Dr. Appleton, just to kind of get to know him and talk about what he's seeing his practice becoming, what we think the community needs, you know, and potentially, you know, how we could support him. You know, obviously we have a contract with PIMC, so we have some limitations there. But he's really looking at a model of healthcare that is different than anything else I think that we have here, and he's really interested in making sure that people can afford to have healthcare no matter what income they have. And so I asked him to come here today to introduce himself to you, and he's really eager to be connected with everyone, and I think he's meeting with some doctors at PIMC tomorrow. So I hope that's something we can continue to explore with him.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I think, you know, one thing to know, Dr. Shinstrom's office on Orcas Island, which is a nonprofit, it's a rural health clinic, RHC. So it's a not-for-profit, but he got over $400,000 in 1 year, too, and that's now helping his...
from who?
From
the PhD.
From the Public Hospital District on Orcas. So
yeah.
Public Hospital District on Orcas.
So they have UW Medicine and Dr. Shinstrom's office
right.
that they subsidize on Orcas Island.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I just think... You know, we want to see Dr. House survive here and that organization, and he's providing a lot of good work and assuring. I mean, his hope is that he can provide anybody who's underserved and the folks that unfortunately don't go to Peace Island Medical Center because it's too expensive and so they don't seek medical care. And it was very interesting hearing the number of people in the populations that aren't getting medical care, aren't, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And,
so
and just
Dr. Fishout has the what?
The Latino community.
The Latino community
they
in particular
they
used to, yeah. is, yeah, just very underserved. So, you know, it was a good meeting, and I really appreciated
I'm grateful they're here. I'm grateful mm-hmm. that practice is still there.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is that fine balance. We're
yes.
so lucky to have a great working relationship yes. with Peace Health, and they provide excellent yes. care to our community, and we're very lucky to have an ER. You know, but they have a rural exemption for billing, so sometimes that's just
cost.
Not,
yeah.
it's not a real reality for certain people to use our hospital.
Yeah.
So, it's something that we need to think about
right.
as board. Mm-hmm. Because affordable health care is something that we care about.
Right.
So, and did we have any other? Oh, we were going to talk about our community relations. We changed from quality assurance to community relations. This particular committee, and you know, this was sort of the idea of being able to respond to the public about things, and you know, following up when we receive a letter from someone. I'm happy to be part of that committee if no one else wants to do it.
I see your assignments.
Yeah, I was just thinking about because that was just another committee report we should talk about. But anyway, that's something.
Well, and I don't know that we need two of us on the transport. I mean,
I guess I'm jumping the gun.
Can I go to that transport
reports?
Meeting also?
Hmm.
I go to the transport meeting also. I just was
not
okay. available.
Okay.
On
so.
That.
So, I'd be also very interested in the community relations.
Okay, well, we can talk about that
yeah.
in our next thing, but that's,
okay.
I guess, we're talking
next
about
time.
Committee reports.
Okay.
It's a lot of committees, and it's a lot of reports. but in the interest of all of that, let's move on to our next topic, if that's okay with everybody, the integration of EMS and fire.